We're going to look at that in this morning's sermon, and then Monday through Friday evenings, different aspects of that theme of our sanctification. But this morning, I'd like to use the class period to kind of give a little bit of an update about some of the things going on in the work in Brazil, because the congregation here has been involved in that work since we first went there. That's been almost 15 years ago. I was thinking this morning a little bit about how quickly the years passed by. It was 39 years ago that I sat in this building for the first time. And I was very, very young at that point, of course, but the time has passed. And I was thinking a little bit more as far as the involvement with the congregation here, even after we moved away a few years later. When I began preaching, it wasn't very long after that the congregation here began to help in my support and work in different places here in the United States before going to Brazil. Jack would probably remember as well as I would, but if I'm not mistaken, the congregation here has been involved in supporting me regularly for 27 years straight. He probably has the records to confirm that somewhere along the way. But I appreciate very much the faithfulness the church has shown here in helping us and enabling us to be involved in work in a few different places before we went to Brazil, and some things we're going to look at as far as the work in Brazil. We came through here 2 years ago and did not realize quite at that point how much of a transition point that would be in our work. The last 2 years in our work down there have been considerably different than the first 13 years. And I'm going to focus primarily on those last couple of years in the comments I'll make this morning. I do want to very briefly review a few things, because there may be a few people here who have not been here in previous times and may be wondering a little bit about what language they speak in Brazil and where it is. So I want to very briefly go through a few things that we've looked at before, just to kind of give some context. And then I'll use most of the time to talk about the last couple of years. The country of Brazil is about half of the South American continent and approximately the size of the 48 contiguous states of the U.S., a little bit larger than the 48 states. A little smaller population than here, and the population of the country is concentrated along the coast. Maybe not. Okay. If I know how. Okay, that's the problem. I left this country in the 20th century, and I'm still not caught up to the 21st. So, along the coast, though, you can see that most of the major cities are positioned in that part of the country. Something like 80% of the population lives within just 150 miles or so of the Atlantic seaboard. And so much of what we'll talk about later in travel will involve some of these cities that you see along the coast there. The language, everybody I think already knows, we speak Portuguese down there, and yes, I do all of my teaching and preaching in Portuguese, which means when I come back to the States, today's only the second time I've preached since I've been back in the States, my wife is sitting here just waiting for me to lapse into Portuguese. She'll probably get her wish at least a time or two. We live in the city of São Paulo, which is something comparable to New York City in size, about 20 million people altogether in that metropolitan area, making it one of the largest cities in the world. Just in São Paulo, obviously, we have a lot of opportunities. That's a city with more than 10 times the population of the state of West Virginia. And so you can imagine the kind of opportunities that presents. One out of every 9 Brazilians lives in the city of São Paulo, the metropolitan area, which means also that it's been kind of a hub to be able to reach out to other places because of the easy access we have to people who come from all over. And what that would be equivalent is to taking the total population of the states of Alabama, Tennessee, and Georgia and putting it into a geographic area about 40% the size of urban Atlanta. If you think the traffic's bad in Atlanta, you get the picture. The state of São Paulo is twice the size of the state of New York as far as the population of the state, with 37 million people, roughly the population of California. And to do that, you'd have to put in West Virginia, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Tennessee, plus Georgia, Florida, and Alabama, all into the same state to get something comparable to what we have in that state. But in a much smaller area, about the size of the states of West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Maryland put together. So again, a lot of people in a relatively small area. Last time I was here, I mentioned something about the different ones who have been involved in the work there over the years. Sorry, I went a little too fast. Several North Americans who have lived there and preached for some time, others who have visited, and many others who have helped in support and the prayers and the encouragement given to us. And, of course, the Brazilian Christians, and that's going to be the long-term focus of the work, has to be the long-term focus of the work. There were a couple of congregations that already existed there before we went that have received our help, some that have changed their direction as they've studied the Bible further with us. But most of the work we've done have been with congregations that we've helped to start. And I'll touch on those a little bit later this morning, kind of give an update on that. I want to get now to these last 2 years, since the last time I was here. 2006 was a turning point for us for a pretty simple reason. Our kids grew up. Our youngest son, Joshua, stayed in the United States in 2006. He is now back in Brazil and working there. But that was the point where the nest became empty. During the several years before that, I had not traveled away from Sao Paulo much at all. During the time that my kids were in their teenage years, I had tried to stay closer to home. And as I've already pointed out, there's plenty of work to be done in Sao Paulo. But after the kids grew up and I felt a little bit more of a freedom to travel, we started to look at other cities because we realized that there were so many opportunities with contacts in other parts of the country. Sao Paulo is a big city, but there are many other large cities in the country, and therefore we saw opportunities to try to go to these places and to meet personally some of the people who were receiving materials by mail, or even more so, studying by internet. And so for the last couple of years, we started to target some of those cities. We looked first at the size of the cities, imagining that we'd find more contacts in a city of 10 million than in a city of 100,000. Not necessarily is that always the case, but that was the principle we worked with. We looked at the contacts that we had, where we'd already been mailing materials out for several years and also had people studying by way of internet. And so we started to go to some of these cities and to find places that we could do public studies and invite people to come to those studies. It might be a school building, it might be a conference room of a hotel, but some place that we'd be able to invite people in and to try to study with them and to challenge them to apply some of the things they'd already been learning. We sent out letters, put internet announcements out, sometimes have done door-to-door work to try to find additional contacts in those places. And in the studies themselves, we've taken a very direct approach to critical questions. That particular approach has been a little different than much of the work that I had done in the United States before moving to Brazil. When we work in a community, like you, most of you live in Peyton City, you meet the same people on the street day after day. You work beside the same people. You have contact many times over a period of time, and therefore can often work with those people in a gradual way. You can kind of establish some groundwork, and you can work through some things because you're likely going to see the same people repeatedly. That's not always the case, and it's the kind of work that we're involved in. Sometimes a person will come to a Bible class, and it may be the only time we're ever going to have contact directly with that person. And so we learned over the last several years the importance of getting straight to the point, dealing with things much more directly than what I had been accustomed to doing before. In this case, not depending so much on laying the groundwork personally, but a lot of times the groundwork was already established through material that had been sent by mail or things that people had studied by internet. So a lot of times we have people coming who already understand the basics of the gospel, who already maybe are even frustrated with the problems of false doctrines being taught in various human denominations, but are still needing a little bit of clarification on some points and maybe a little bit of a nudge to actually make some decisions. And so our approach has been much more direct. Normally when I go to a city, the second night I'm in the city, I'll do a very extensive lesson on the plan of salvation in which I include a very direct defense of the necessity of baptism for the remission of sins, things that I might have taken a little more time to get to in other circumstances. But in this situation, we've seen the need to go directly to some of those questions. A lot of teaching about the difference between the New Testament plan for how we should serve God, what the church is, how it should function, in contrast to a lot of the practices that are common in denominations. And of course, the results of this kind of work, as people are converted, and there have been several conversions in different parts of the country, then we try to help these new Christians organize themselves into new congregations. One thing that must be understood, we're talking about a country the size of the 48 states, but with a handful of Christians trying to do this work, the Christians that we know. If God has others that we don't know about, that's wonderful. But that we know, just a handful of people trying to do this work. We're not always in a position where somebody's going to be able to go every Sunday and worship with a new congregation. I've had situations literally where I've baptized people on Saturday night. I already knew I'd have to leave at 6 o'clock on Sunday morning because of a commitment to be in another state for Sunday worship. And so I'd be giving a very quick orientation to a couple of men of how they were going to do worship the next day. And literally, we've had situations like that, of seeing people start and having to take over the responsibilities almost immediately for studying, for teaching each other. Naturally, we try to get back there as quickly as we can to give some additional help. But it's the practical reality of dealing with so many opportunities in such a big country. During these past 2 years, I've concentrated on work in 6 states outside of the state of São Paulo. We've also done some work in São Paulo that I'll refer to here in a moment. But when we first started looking to go elsewhere, we looked to Rio. I'm going to go up here a little bit. São Paulo is over here on the coast. Rio is just right across here. Probably the best known city in Brazil. It's the second largest city. And so we first started to that city because we did see so many people, so many contacts there. And we've gone back several times. We've done studies in a downtown hotel conference room there in Rio, and we've had reasonably good participation. Compared to some of the other cities that I'm going to talk about, I've been disappointed as far as results. People that come to studies, but they're not willing to make a break from some of their denominational practices. Rio opened the door to Ceará. And when I say open the door is a long way away. Rio is here. This pointer worked in the 20th century, still works in the 21st. Rio is here. Fortaleza is the primary city of Ceará, way up here on the northern coast. As you can see, the equator runs through here. Fortaleza is about 3 degrees south of the equator. That's the closest I've ever touched the ground to the equator, is in Fortaleza. My wife, who came from Africa, may have been closer to that years ago, but I've only gotten that close to it so far. Anyway, she can explain all that later. The way that Rio opened the door to Fortaleza was through a story that I believe illustrates God's providence. I don't believe that God bothers to explain to us how he does a lot of things, but there are times that we can look at things after they've happened and realize a certain series of events that it's just awfully hard to use the word coincidence in relationship to those things. We went over to Rio the first time that we went. I believe it was November of 2006, the first time we did public studies there. I'd already gone over there one time before to do some preliminary work and to find a place to do the studies. Had chosen a certain hotel that was close to the metro, the subway lines, close to bus stops, so it would be accessible for people to get to. And so we went for the study, and we had, I don't remember, maybe 20 or 30 people that participated in the studies that first time. But among those people was a man who lived in Fortaleza, way up there on the north coast. The story behind this man getting there, summarized, is the following. He worked for the equivalent of the Census Bureau of Brazil, has worked for them for a long time. And they were having a meeting in Rio of representatives from the different states who were going to be involved in this meeting. He didn't want to go to the meeting because his father was literally on his deathbed. In fact, his father died the next month. So he asked a co-worker to go in his place, and the co-worker agreed. At the last minute, the co-worker had to cancel, and so this man, Carlos Mauricio, ended up going anyway to the meeting. Of 20-some people who were going to Rio for that meeting, all but two chose to stay in a hotel along the beaches on the southern part of the city. Carlos Mauricio was one of the two that stayed in the same hotel that we were doing our studies in. And so he stopped at the desk there in the hotel to ask them where there was a Baptist church. He was a part of a Baptist church, and that's where he wanted to go. And they told him where he could find one, but they said, but you know they're having Bible studies right here in this room over here. And so he decided to see what the Bible studies were like. And he went in and he participated in that first study and continued then to come back to all the classes until he had to go back home a couple of days later. Got back home and got in touch with us by telephone. One of the brethren who'd been with me had talked with him more extensively during the breaks. So he called him, explained the situation. He said, you know, I got back home here. And he said, I didn't realize this when I was in Rio, but when I got back home and started talking to my sister, we realized that we've already gotten some of the literature that you all send out. This is a city more than 2,000 miles away from us. And so he asked if somebody could make a trip up there to try to help them, because he said he had learned enough already that he realized that after more than 30 years in the same congregation, same Baptist church, that he wasn't going to be able to stay there. So initially, another brother made the trip up there, made 2 trips before I ever went to Ceará. And in those trips, studied with a number of people, and the first few baptisms occurred. So they started meeting together as a small congregation in a home. This brother came back to São Paulo and was talking to me repeatedly about it. He said, you need to get up there. And so finally I was able to schedule a trip in March of 2007, about 4 months after that first contact.
But I told him, I said, if I go up there, I've got other contacts with people that are studying by internet and by mail. I'd like to find a place to do something more public and see who else might show up. And so he found a place, another hotel meeting room. And when I went to Seattle the first time, it was just Benita and me. When we got there for these studies, and we were in this hotel conference room on a Thursday night waiting to start the studies, hoping that maybe some people would come. As in other places, we'd have 15, 20, 25, 30 people sometimes show up. So Benita and I were there. The only person I knew in that town was this Carlos Mauricio. But that night, we met another 56 people, showed up for the first study. You start to do the calculation. Have a gospel meeting with a ratio of one Christian for every 28 visitors. Keeps you busy. Gives you an opportunity to try to get around to talk to people and to do something with them. And that was our introduction to the work in Ceará and Fortaleza. I've been back up there about five times, I guess, over the last year and a half. The man who had initially gone up there from São Paulo, who was a faithful preacher there in São Paulo, in January of this year moved up to Ceará. And I'll comment a little bit more about that a little later on. Paraíba is kind of down the coast from Fortaleza, includes this area right in here between Natal and Recife. I'll comment a little later about a church that had already begun there about 10 years ago, and our opportunity to work with them. Bahia comes down further, includes the capital city of Salvador, which you can see right on the coast there, about the middle of the map. And then Sergipe, I skipped over as far as geography, because it was Salvador that took us back up the coast. Sergipe is the state that fits right in here. They don't even have a city big enough to be on this map. The capital city of Aracaju only has about 400,000 people, so it didn't merit a placement on the map there. Minas Gerais is the city that is between São Paulo and Salvador and Bahia, that includes the capital of Belo Horizonte. And I'll talk a little later about the new church in Ipatinga in that state. These are the six states that we've traveled in over the last, or that we've done work in. We've traveled through others during these last couple of years. That accounts for roughly a quarter of the states of São Paulo, or of Brazil, but includes the most populous of the states and the most populous of the cities. Just sometimes people ask us what it's like traveling. Several of my trips I've done by plane, but we've done some by car. These scenes are from some of the travel by car, and it helps to give a sampling maybe of what we go through there to get to some of these places. In January, late January to beginning of March, Benita and I made a trip of about 5,000 miles to work in several different states. And so we took some pictures along the way. The picture on the bottom left is a federal highway in Brazil. They're not all that bad, but I've yet to find a county road around here that's as bad as what some of the federal highways are in Brazil. Pictures along the top left is a settlement of people in a kind of a socialist movement to try to get redistribution of land. And they will set up settlements along the road and often invade ranches or farms to try to take the land. And so that was one of their settlements that we passed. The one in the top middle is literally a mud hut. This one has a terracotta roof. A lot of them have thatched roofs. And of course, this is a whole different life than what we have in São Paulo, in a huge city. This is a different side of the country. And then just a few other scenes there from along the way on the road. Now, a little bit more specifically to some of the work in these cities that I mentioned. This Rio de Janeiro. I'm trying to pronounce that halfway American style. But anyway, as I mentioned, we usually look for a conference room where we can meet with people in a hotel or a school building. And a couple of those are just scenery things. This picture on the bottom right is of a group of Christians. They started meeting as a congregation after we had been there in some of these studies. There were some who were Christians who were not satisfied with some of the things in the churches that they were in, some of the practices not authorized in the scriptures. A family who had moved over to that area from São Paulo. So they started meeting. This was where they were meeting. This place that they were meeting in, basically in the middle of a slum, a very smelly creek that was running along behind it, a few pigs running loose right outside the door as we were having Bible study. A little different situation than what most of us grow up accustomed to as places to meet. Samuel is the brother that moved over from São Paulo to that area and was helping. That work did not go very well. He got rather frustrated with the lack of commitment of some of the people there and ended up going back to meeting again in the city that he lives in Petrópolis, which is about an hour and a half out of Rio. Fortaleza is the one that I gave some background to about the initial contact. The man on the far left, and I realize these pictures are not great, but the far left is the one that I talked about who went down to Rio and was our original contact. And these are some of the others who have obeyed the gospel there. Down at the bottom here is where we were doing public studies in one of the hotels there. And João Batista is the brother from São Paulo who moved to Fortaleza in January. João is probably the brother that I have the greatest confidence in of all the Brazilians that I've had the privilege to work with. I think he will do a very good work in Fortaleza, and we're certainly praying that that work will be fruitful as he's able to concentrate more on helping those brethren. Bahia is somewhat further south from Fortaleza. I showed there where Salvador was on the map. The work in Bahia really began, as far as our involvement in it, back in 1998, and I've talked about that on previous trips here. The first time we went there, we stayed for 5 days. There were 12 people baptized. Most of them continue to participate in the congregation that was formed in that city. Gerson, whose family is pictured in the top photo, had been converted a few years before that in São Paulo and has been working with them as an evangelist since that time. I've had opportunity to go back through Jequié about 3 times in the past year or so, and to do some public studies, which helps to find some additional contacts for them to work with, as well as an opportunity to kind of strengthen the congregation there. In the same state, we've done a little bit of work up in Dias d'Avila, which is a city just outside of Salvador. There were some Christians in that area who were not meeting together as a church, and we've encouraged them to start doing that. And then in Salvador itself, some public studies. Salvador was also a little bit of a disappointment as far as the kind of response that we got, but Salvador opened a door to another city. And that's the part that turns out to be interesting. We go where we think we're going to find people interested. Sometimes the Lord knows they're somewhere else. And in this case, the other city that opened the door was Aracaju in Sergipe. Story behind this involves the young man who's in both of these pictures with me and then with his wife over here, Jean. Jean had already separated himself from denominations. He and his wife had been studying at home because they did not agree with the practices and teachings in the denominations that they knew. And he had started through the internet studying some of our material and found out that we were going to be in Salvador. So on a Friday night at midnight, he got on a bus in his city of Aracaju, rode the bus for 5.5 hours to get to Salvador. When we started studies on Saturday morning, he was already there waiting to participate. After having ridden the bus most of the night, he stayed awake and participated well in these studies all day long, because on Saturdays we normally do 6 hours of studies. What I'm planning to do here in 5 nights will be the condensed version of what I would sometimes do in 1 day down there. And we'll have sometimes dozens of people that will participate and stay with that all day. Jean did that. We went to lunch together, talked some more at lunch. After we were done the last of the studies, early evening, he said, "My bus doesn't leave until 10 o'clock tonight to go back home, and I've got a few more questions." So we sat down and studied, and in those, I raised some questions to him. And after a while, the question he asked literally was, "Is there water here at the hotel?" And so we went up to the swimming pool on the roof where Jean was baptized that night, talked to him a little bit longer, got some pizza together, and took him to the bus stop, and he got on a bus and went back home. He got back home and he talked to his wife about what he'd done, and initially she thought that her baptism was already valid. But when we were there then a month later, I got opportunity to talk with her and to question her conversion, and she realized that she had not been baptized according to what the scriptures teach and decided that day to do that. So her husband baptized her, and they have been meeting then. We've been back to the city a few times, have found some other people, and they've actually are studying together with several other people in the city of Aracaju. And by the way, Jean and Kelly are expecting their first child. They've been married about 5 or 6 years, and they just told us recently they're expecting their first child. João Pessoa is in the state of Paraíba. This is another one that has a history that goes back several years, but our contact has been more recent. Back about 10 years ago, some people in João Pessoa made contact through correspondence and internet, and some brethren, Brazilians from São Paulo, went up there, studied with several of them. There were a few of them were baptized, and a church began. Several different people have made trips up there, and one American preacher, Carl Ballard, who's now back in the U.S., he and his wife moved up there and lived there for a while, working with these brethren. I had not been to João Pessoa until this past year, earlier this year. I'd never had the opportunity to make a trip up there. As I said, I stayed mostly in São Paulo for several years. So we had the opportunity to go there, and we're very encouraged by what we saw in working with these brethren for a few days. We worked with the congregation and also in public studies. The two pictures here, on the top two pictures, show the congregation in their meeting place on Sunday morning. They meet, and to get the picture of this, they place a little stand for whoever's teaching or preaching kind of in a corner with a little garage off this way and a patio off this way. The people back here can't see the people over there, but everybody can see whoever's up front. And so they meet in these two wings of the space that they have in this house. And they had probably 35 or so people there in these two wings, most of the members of the congregation. We also, while we were there, did some public studies in a community center in that city and had some other good contacts, some of whom they have continued to work with since that time. Ipatinga is in the state of Minas Gerais, which is the state just to our north. And again, real briefly, I want to tell the story of how things got started in Ipatinga. A man named Marcelo. Marcelo's kind of hiding in the back of this picture with his wife right here. Marcelo had already left the denomination they were involved in 2 or 3 years back. They said they couldn't accept anymore some of the absurd things that were being taught. So they started to meet together in their home and continued to feel very isolated with that. In fact, he said that they started to look on the internet to see if they could find anybody else that had the same concerns that they did, that felt like they ought to just be Christians without participating in some denomination. And so he said they found several sites on the internet that taught some things along those lines, and he started studying them. But the way Marcelo was rather methodic about his things, he'd study these sites until he found something that clearly contradicted the scriptures. He said, then I'd quit studying that site. And so he went by this process, eliminating different sites. Finally, he said he was studying one site only, and that's when he got in touch with me. The only site he was still studying was our internet website. So he got in touch. He and his father had spent over 40 years in the same denomination, but they were troubled by a number of things. And so I got the opportunity to go there. The first visit, I was only able to spend a couple of days with them, baptized two men, Marcelo and his brother-in-law. Subsequently, they've had other baptisms. There are now five of them meeting in that city. And this picture in the middle was the baptism of his sister, Nejimar, the last time we were there. The last time we also did public studies in a hotel, again trying to find some additional contacts, and we did have pretty good participation in that. But it's been very refreshing to work with people who have basically studied their own way out of denominationalism and are just wanting to do what the Lord teaches. Back in São Paulo, very briefly here, and I'm going to have to be very brief, every time I go to some other city to do studies, I get emails of complaint. People say, why aren't you doing it in our city? And so we try to figure out when we might be able to get to some other places. But a lot of those come from São Paulo, where I live. Because while there are several congregations now in São Paulo, we've not done this kind of public work in a neutral location anywhere recently. So after several of those complaints, we decided to do that in São Paulo. I asked brethren from several congregations if they'd help as far as being there, maybe help with getting some flyers out and announcing it. And so in preparation for that work, about 14,000 flyers were handed out door-to-door. About 3,500 more were mailed to our contacts in that area. We put information on the internet, and brethren from seven different congregations, most of those congregations we've helped to start, came to help with the studies to be there. So we wouldn't have that situation of two of us and 56 or 57 visitors come in. When we did the studies on a Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday, we had 75 visitors, not counting the Christians that were there to help. In fact, that meant about a 3-to-1 ratio of visitors to Christians during those 3 days. And some good results from that. There were two people baptized shortly after as a result of that work, and there are a number of others that I think are going to turn out to be good opportunities. I won't go through this whole list because I've already referred to about half of these congregations, but this is a list of the congregations that we have contact with and are able to work with now after nearly 15 years in Brazil. The top two on that list are congregations that we did not help start. The church in Parque Santo Antonio, where we are worshiping and have been since 1995, was already there and asked for our help and basically changed directions as we studied some things together. The church in Jardim São Bernardo started while we were in Brazil, but without our help, and then almost immediately asked for help, and so we've continued to have contact with those. All of these others are congregations that we've had a hand in helping to start over these last almost 15 years. Real briefly, I won't mention the names of each group, but where it says PSA, that's referring to the church at Parque Santo Antonio. The congregation at Parque in some way helped in getting things started, sending a preacher to go preach in a place, or sometimes a swarm that went out to start that congregation. The church at Parque is smaller now than it used to be. But we figured out recently that over the last 12 years, the congregation has had a hand in the start of 18 other congregations. Several of those by people swarming out from the congregation at Parque. So we're down to about 100 people right now at Parque. There was one time the group had gotten up to about 180. But with these swarms out in other places, our numbers are reduced, and that's also cut into the financial ability of the congregation, made a little bit harder to maintain support of some of the brethren that the church there supports. But has had an opportunity to help in getting the gospel taken out to a lot of different places. Printed materials I've talked about in other trips here. Real briefly, I want to tell you a little bit about what has led to so many of these contacts. This part here, I just put it all up at once, and I'll go through it real briefly. One of the most encouraging things to me has been to see the results in the last few years from the efforts made on the website. And I think you'll understand that excitement as I kind of summarize this. We've been working on this website for the last 13 years. During that time, we've put about 1,500 articles on it, over 200 audio messages on there, complete books, a few books that we've been able to translate and put on there, and of course all of this that people can download free. But in the last few years, as internet has become more accessible to more Brazilians, this has just kind of exploded. And what we have seen are some of these numbers. Last month, the website got 9,300 visits per day, 289,000 during the course of the month, and those from 208,000 different people. So a number who come back, but many who are coming there for the first time. Each visitor, on average, clicks on between 4 and 5 different pages on the site, so that means we got 1.3 million page clicks during a month's time. Per day, over 3,000 people are downloading audio messages off of the site. Of those who visit, 73% mark it as a favorite, which means they're leaving it to come back another time, even if they don't spend much time that particular moment. And, of course, the Internet is anonymous to a large extent, so we've worked on some ways to try to get information about some of our contacts, the more interested people, and we're still working on that. Currently, we're getting about 20 identifiable contacts a day from the site. By that, I mean people where we have a name, an email, and we know at least what city they live in, to help us in plotting out where we can better do some of the other work. In addition to the website, or related to it, we realize that some people can use the internet with broadband at school or at work or at a cyber cafe, but they don't use it at home. But they might have a computer at home. So we put together a CD where we put all the information that's on the website onto one CD and offered that to people, and also made it to where they could download the same CD directly from the internet, so we wouldn't even have to mail it to them. We've mailed out or given out something like 1,200 CDs in the last few months, but in the first month that we offered it for download, more than 10,000 people downloaded the entire CD. That's, for those of you that work with the internet, that's over 200 megabytes of a download of a zipped file. On my computer, it took a couple hours to do it. 10,000 people did that within a month's time. When we saw that that worked, we started to put together the audio messages in larger packages that could be downloaded. Carl Henneke, who does the work on the site, pulled together 15 sermons and put them into one package that people could download directly from the site. In the first 3 weeks, 5,000 people downloaded the whole package of 15 sermons that they can then use on an MP3 player, listen to it on the bus while they're going to work. I don't know about the rest of you, but that kind of gets me excited to see that kind of interest, to realize that what it basically amounts to is in 5 or 6 months' time, we're having contact with the equivalent of the population of the state of West Virginia, of people looking to see something about the gospel and coming to that website looking for something. There's the bell. Real quickly, obviously with all that going on, we do have challenges ahead to continue to build up the brethren that are there and to continue the follow-up work on these contacts in other places. We intend to continue to focus on big cities, but when we see certain situations, we'll go to some smaller places. And everybody asks sometimes about the family. Benita's got more pictures. But over the last 15 years, we've gone from the five of us who went down there. We now have our two daughters both married to Brazilians, four grandchildren, all the children of our same oldest daughter, Heather. And all the kids are in Brazil. All of them live within a couple of miles of us at this point. So we took our kids a long way from the grandparents, but so far our grandchildren are closer by.